So we're some pages into chapter 27, the Gnostic being now. Sri Aurobindo. Was describing that the three poises of reality, transcendent, universal, and individual, are the same reality, simultaneous, deeply concordant expressions of one being. He described this supramental consciousness as a primary expression of the truth of being and as an expression of a true consciousness, what he calls Ritam Jyotihi, the truth light. And these first two poises of Satchit Ananda, existence and consciousness, he's given utterance to in the preceding paragraph, but now we're going to take up the third, in which this transcendent being and consciousness form in the supramental a concording cosmic consciousness in individual expression as it pours itself out into delightful abundance. So, the existence of the supramental being would be the play of a manifoldly and multiply manifesting truth power of one existence and one consciousness for the delight of one existence. Delight of the manifestation of the spirit in its truth of being would be the sense of the Gnostic life. The Gnostic life is a life based upon the innate knowledge of the supramental consciousness. Oneness in diversity, diversity within that oneness, predicated upon the absolute truth of being. So it's not a life anymore that is searching for the purpose of its existence. It has found it, and it finds reality everywhere. And the truth behind all appearances are evident to that Gnostic consciousness, a consciousness that really knows. And so it experiences delight because Ananda is unveiled in every guise. All its movements would be a formulation of the truth of the Spirit, but also of the joy of the Spirit. An affirmation of spiritual existence, an affirmation of spiritual consciousness, an affirmation of spiritual delight of being. But this would not be what self-affirmation tends to be in us, in spite of the underlying unity, something egocentric, separative, opposed, or indifferent, or insufficiently alive to the self-affirmation of others or their demand on existence. One in self with all, the supramental being will seek the delight of self-manifestation of the Spirit in himself, but equally the delight of the divine in all. He will have the cosmic joy and will be a power for bringing the bliss of the Spirit, the joy of being, to others. For their joy will be part of his own joy of existence. To be occupied with the good of all beings, to make the joy and grief of others one's own, has been described as a sign of the liberated and fulfilled spiritual man. The supramental being will have no need for that of an altruistic self-effacement, since this occupation will be intimate to his self-fulfillment, the fulfillment of the one in all, and there will be no contradiction or strife between his own good and the good of others, nor will he have any need to acquire a universal sympathy by subjecting himself to the joys and griefs of creatures in the ignorance. His cosmic sympathy will be part of his inborn truth of being and not dependent on a personal participation in the lesser joy and suffering. It will transcend what it embraces, and in that transcendence will be its power. His feeling of universality, his action of universality, will be always a spontaneous state and natural movement, an automatic expression of the truth, an act of the joy of the Spirit's self-existence. There could be in it no place for limited self or desire, or for the satisfaction or frustration of the limited self, or the satisfaction or frustration of desire. No place for the relative and dependent happiness and grief that visit and afflict our limited nature. For these are things that belong to the ego and the ignorance, not to the freedom and truth of the Spirit. The Gnostic being has the will of action, but also the knowledge of what is to be willed and the power to effectuate its knowledge. It will not be led from ignorance to do what is not to be done. And here, an aside vis-a-vis the discussion that Krishna has with Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita about kartavyam karma, the work that has to be done. This is a greater call to action than what the Gita envisages. Moreover, its action is not the seeking for a fruit or result. Its joy is in being and doing, in pure state of spirit, in pure act of spirit, in the pure bliss of the spirit. As its static consciousness will contain all in itself and must be therefore forever self-fulfilled, so its dynamis of consciousness will find in each step and in each act a spiritual freedom and a self-fulfillment. All will be seen in its relation to the whole, so that each step will be luminous and joyous and satisfying in itself, because each is in unison with a luminous totality. This consciousness, this living in the spiritual totality and acting from it, a satisfied totality in essence of being and a satisfied totality in the dynamic movement of being, the sense of the relations of that totality accompanying each step, is indeed the very mark of a supramental consciousness and distinguishes it from the disintegrated, ignorantly successive steps of our consciousness in the ignorance. So you're hearing, again, echoes and echoes of Satchit-Ananda throughout these passages, because it is supermind that expresses the reality of Satchit-Ananda dynamically and multifariously. The Gnostic existence and delight of existence is a universal and total being and delight, and there will be the presence of that totality and universality in each separate movement. In each, there will be not a partial experience of self or a fractional bit of its joy, but the sense of the whole movement of an integral being and the presence of its entire and integral bliss of being, Ananda. Note, when you have a chance, go to the Chambers Dictionary, which was Sri Aurobindo's favorite English dictionary, and look at the definition of integral, and you'll see there that it is that which is not fractional, but which is entire, which is whole, that takes the several parts of something and blends them into a harmonious state of unity. So Sri Aurobindo, even here, as he's writing The Life Divine, has a perfect command of all the connotations of the English that he's expressing. The Gnostic being's knowledge, self-realized in action, will be not an ideative knowledge, but the real idea of the supermind, the instrumentation of an essential light of consciousness. It will be the self-light of all the reality of being and becoming, pouring itself out continually and filling every particular act and activity with the pure and whole delight of its self-existence. So, the real idea, which goes all the way back to the earlier part of The Life Divine, chapter 13, The Divine Maya, where he describes it as a power of conscious force expressive of real being, born out of real being and partaking of its nature, and neither a child of the void nor a weaver of fiction. Now, this is not a direct translation from the Sanskrit, from the Vedic Sanskrit, to arrive at this idea of the real idea. The closest for that is Ritta Chit, which you'll remember is truth consciousness, something that leads us to Satyam Ritam Brahat in the Vedic usage. Satyam, the essential truth. Ritam, the dynamic expression of that central truth. Brahat, the vast expansion of that truth into universality. So let's read that again. The Gnostic being's knowledge, self-realized in action, will be not an ideative knowledge, but the real idea of the supermind, the instrumentation of an essential light of consciousness. It will be the self-light of all the reality of being and becoming, pouring itself out continually and filling every particular act and activity with the pure and whole delight of its self-existence. So you have the essence of the self-existence describing itself as a state of real being, and then a becoming that proceeds upon that real being. So the poise which is static, the poise that is active. An evolution of Gnostic consciousness brings with it a transformation of our world consciousness and world action, for it takes up into the new power of awareness not only the inner existence, but our outer being and our world being. There is a remaking of both, an integration of them in the sense and power of the spiritual existence. So for this Gnostic being, the spiritual existence is the fundamental reality. It's not simply an inner state, but it includes, all the way down to our material foundation, all that is involved in the world, which is involved in us. The microcosm and the macrocosm are one. So he's taking us from the essential truth expressed above in a furtherance into the cosmic order in this paragraph. There must come upon us, he writes, in the change at once, a reversal and rejection of our present way of existence and a fulfillment of its inner trend and tendency. Well, our present existence is dominated by ignorance and darkness and division, so we have to move away from that and fulfill ourselves in what the inner trend is taking us to, the manifestation of the Gnostic nature. For we stand now between these two terms, an outer world of life and matter that has made us, and a remaking of the world by ourselves in the sense of the evolving spirit. Our present way of living is at once a subjection to life force and matter, and a struggle with life and matter. In its first appearance, an outer existence creates by our reactions to it an inner or mental existence. If we shape ourselves at all, it is in most men less by the conscious pressure of a free soul or intelligence from within than by a response to our environment and the world nature acting upon us. But what we move towards in the development of our conscious being is an inner existence creating by its knowledge and power its own outer form of living and self-expressive environment of living. In the Gnostic nature, this movement will have consummated itself. The nature of living will be an accomplished inner existence whose light and power will take perfect body in the outer life. The Gnostic being will take up the world of life and matter, but he will turn and adapt it to his own truth and purpose of existence. He will mold life itself into his own spiritual image. And this he will be able to do because he has the secret of a spiritual creation and is in communion and oneness with the Creator within him. This will be first effective in the shaping of his own inner and outer individual existence, but the same power and principle will operate in any common Gnostic life. The relations of Gnostic being with Gnostic being will be the expression of their one Gnostic self and supernature shaping into a significant power and form of itself, the whole common existence. So this truth consciousness reaching itself out into the material, the vital, and the mental existence will find no bordering there even, but will find its commonality with all others who share that consciousness. And the constitution of a conscious community becomes a more and more truthful, constant, and present reality. In all spiritual living, the inner life is the thing of first importance. The spiritual man lives always within, and in a world of the ignorance that refuses to change, he has to be, in a certain sense, separate from it, and to guard his inner life against the intrusion and influence of the darker forces of the ignorance. He is out of the world even when he is within it. If he acts upon it, it is from the fortress of his inner spiritual being, where in the inmost sanctuary he is one with the supreme existence, or the soul and God are alone together. The Gnostic life will be an inner life in which the antinomy of the inner and the outer, the self and the world, will have been cured and exceeded. The Gnostic being will have indeed an inmost existence in which he is alone with God, one with the eternal, self-plunged into the depths of the infinite, in communion with its heights and its luminous abysses of secrecy. Nothing will be able to disturb or to invade these depths or bring him down from the summits, neither the world's contents, nor his action, nor all that is around him. This is the transcendence aspect of the spiritual life, and it is necessary for the freedom of the spirit. For otherwise, the identity in nature with the world would be a binding limitation and not a free identity. You'll remember hundreds of pages ago, Sri Aurobindo describing how this unnameable reality cannot finally even be called real being. It can also be called beyond sat and asat, because it is free even from its determination as being. Always it reserves its right for transcendence, and the transcendent cannot be fully defined. So not to have that, but to be defined by either cosmic or individual formation, would be to this spirit an imprisonment. Always in some aspect of itself, it is free, and that. As again, when you look at Nataraj and you see, despite the whirling dance that propagates and destroys the universe, his eyes are ever closed, concentrated on the infinity that is behind. So that is a must, and yet he goes on. But at the same time, God love and the delight of God will be the heart's expression of that inner communion and oneness. And that delight and love will expand itself to embrace all existence. The peace of God within will be extended in the Gnostic experience of the universe into a universal calm of equality, not merely passive, but dynamic. A calm of freedom and oneness dominating all that meets it, tranquilizing all that enters into it, imposing its law of peace on the supramental being's relations with the world in which he is living. Into all his acts, the inner oneness, the inner communion, will attend him and enter into his relations with others, who will not be to him others, but selves of himself in the one existence, his own universal existence. It is this poise and freedom in the spirit that will enable him to take all life into himself, while still remaining the spiritual self, and to embrace even the world of the ignorance without himself entering into the ignorance. So, the one in all, the all in the one, ever above, immanent to the last particle of being, held together, not simply in oneness of being and consciousness, but in the absolute delight, the rapture, the love that sustains, ultimately, gives the rasa of existence, the sap. For his experience of cosmic existence will be, by its form of nature and by an individualized centration, that of one living in the universe, but at the same time, by self-diffusion and extension in oneness, that of one who carries the universe and all its beings within him. So if the prior paragraph placed primary emphasis on the transcendence, this paragraph places it on the universal expression of that. This extended state of being will not only be an extension in oneness of self, or an extension in conceptive idea and vision, but an extension of oneness in heart, in sense, in a concrete physical consciousness. He will have the cosmic consciousness, sense, feeling by which all objective life will become part of his subjective existence, and by which He will realize, perceive, feel, see, hear the divine in all forms. All forms and movements will be realized, sensed, seen, heard, felt, as if taking place within his own vast self of being. So you can see, here is the expression in the apprehendable universe of that same oneness. And this Sri Aurobindo has expressed in poetry, not simply in savitri, not exclusively in savitri, but also in his sonnets, given full voice to this because this was his experience decades and decades before ever he considered leaving his body. This was the warp and the woof of his own personal existence. The world will be connected not only with his outer, but with his inner life. He will not meet the world only in its external form by an external contact. He will be inwardly in contact with the inner self of things and beings. He will meet consciously their inner as well as their outer reactions. He will be aware of that within them of which they themselves will not be aware. Act upon all with an inner comprehension. Encounter all with a perfect sympathy and sense of oneness, but also an independence which is not overmastered by any contact. His action on the world will be largely an inner action by the power of the spirit, by the spiritual supramental idea force formulating itself in the world, by the secret unspoken word, by the power of the heart, by the dynamic life force, by the enveloping and penetrating power of the self one with all things. The outer expressed and visible action will be only a fringe, a last projection of this vaster single total of activity. Harmonic echoes again from the Isha Upanishad. At the same time, the universal inner life of the individual will not be confined to an inner, pervasive, and inclusive contact with the physical world alone. It will extend beyond it through the full realization of the subliminal inner being's natural connection with other planes of being. A knowledge of their powers and influences will have become a normal element of the inner experience, and the happenings of this world will be seen not solely in their external aspect, but also in the light of all that is secret behind the physical and terrestrial creation and movement. So, it is an entire cosmic consciousness, not just with the Virat aspect of being, the external, vast, majestic physical world, but also the inner world, the conceptive, what we would call Hiranyagarbha, all the subliminal realms of the inner mind, of the inner vital, of the subtle physical, would be fully patent to this Gnostic consciousness. A Gnostic being will possess not only a truth-conscious control of the realized spirit's power over its physical world, but also the full power of the mental and vital planes and the use of their greater forces for the perfection of the physical existence. So he has asserted that the supramental consciousness expressing itself through the Gnostic life will command matter, but also life and also mind, able to place its power on each of these regions or all of them collectively and manifest through these forces, through these forms, what it wishes to do, its will will be effective. This greater knowledge and wider hold of all existence will enormously increase the power of instrumentation of the Gnostic being on his surroundings and on the world of physical nature. So this is a penetrating power on all planes. And ultimately, if the supramental is the creative consciousness of the divine, of Satchit Ananda, its consciousness must have power over existence. At some point, consciousness has to shape and reshape matter. If it has not that power, it cannot be the originating consciousness. In the self-existence, of which supermind is the dynamic truth consciousness, there can be no aim of being except to be sat, no aim of consciousness except to be conscious of being, no aim of delight of being other than its delight. All is a self-existent and self-sufficient eternity. Manifestation, becoming, has in its original supramental movement the same character. It sustains in a self-existent and self-sufficient rhythm an activity of being, which sees itself as a manifold becoming, an activity of consciousness, which takes the form of a manifold self-knowledge, an activity of force of conscious existence, which exists for the glory and beauty of its own manifold power of being, an activity of delight, which assumes innumerable forms of delight. And so this activity of chit is described. Chit tapas, chit shakti. So the supramental activity reveals this aspect of Satchit Ananda. The existence and consciousness of the supramental being here in matter will have fundamentally the same nature, but with subordinate characters which mark the difference between supermind in its own plane and supermind working in its manifested power in the earth existence. For here, there will be an evolving being, an evolving consciousness, an evolving delight of existence. The Gnostic being will appear as the sign of an evolution from the consciousness of the ignorance into the consciousness of Satchit Ananda. In the ignorance, one is there primarily to grow, to know and to do, or more exactly, to grow into something, to arrive by knowledge at something, to get something done. Imperfect, we have no satisfaction of our being. We must perforce strive with labor and difficulty to grow into something we are not. Ignorant and burdened with a consciousness of our ignorance, we have to arrive at something by which we can feel that we know. Bounded with incapacity, we have to hunt after strength and power. Afflicted with a consciousness of suffering, we have to try to get something done by which we catch at some pleasure or lay hold on some satisfying reality of life. To maintain existence is indeed our first occupation and necessity, but it is only a starting point. For the mere maintenance of an imperfect existence, checkered with suffering, cannot be sufficient as an aim of our being. The instinctive will of existence, the pleasure of existence, which is all that the ignorance can make out of the secret underlying power and ananda, has to be supplemented by the need to do and become. But what to do and what to become is not clearly known to us. We get what knowledge we can, what power, strength, purity, peace we can, what delight we can, become what we can. But our aims and our effort towards their achievement and the little we can hold as our gains turn into meshes by which we are bound. It is these things that become for us the object of life. To know our souls and to be ourselves, which must be the foundation of our true way of being, is a secret that escapes us in our preoccupation with an external learning, an external construction of knowledge, the achievement of an external action, an external delight and pleasure. The spiritual man is one who has discovered his soul. He has found his self and lives in that, is conscious of it, has the joy of it. He needs nothing external for his completeness of existence. The Gnostic being, starting from this new basis, takes up our ignorant becoming and turns it into a luminous becoming of knowledge and a realized power of being. All, therefore, that is our attempt to be in the ignorance, he will fulfill in the knowledge. All knowledge he will turn into a manifestation of the self-knowledge of being. All power and action into a power and action of the self-force of being. All delight into a universal delight of self-existence. Attachment and bondage will fall away, because at each step and in each thing, there will be the full satisfaction of self-existence, the light of the consciousness fulfilling itself, the ecstasy of delight of existence finding itself. Each stage of the evolution and the knowledge will be an unfolding of this power and will of being and this joy to be, a free becoming supported by the sense of the infinite, the bliss of the Brahman, the luminous sanction of the transcendence. So, an excellent place to pause. We'll continue next time. This is a passage from Book 1, the Book of Beginnings in Savitri, in Canto 3, The Yoga of the Soul's Release. As a sculptor chisels a deity out of stone, he slowly chipped off the dark envelope, line of defense of nature's ignorance, the illusion and mystery of the inconscient, in whose black pall the eternal wraps his head, that he may act unknown in cosmic time. A splendor of self-creation from the peaks, a transfiguration in the mystic depths, a happier cosmic working could begin and fashion the world shape in him anew. God found in nature, nature fulfilled in God. Already in him was seen that task of power. Life made its home on the high tops of self. His soul, mind, heart became a single sun. Only life's lower reaches remained dim. But there, too, in the uncertain shadow of life, there was a labor and a fiery breath. The ambiguous, cowled, celestial puissance worked watched by the inner witness's moveless peace. Even on the struggling nature left below, strong periods of illumination came. Lightnings of glory after glory burned. Experience was a tale of blaze and fire. Air rippled round the argosies of the gods. Strange riches sailed to him from the unseen. Splendors of insight filled the blank of thought. Knowledge spoke to the inconscient stillnesses. Rivers poured down of bliss and luminous force. Visits of beauty, storm sweeps of delight, rained from the all-powerful mystery above. Thence stooped the eagles of omniscience. A dense veil was rent, a mighty whisper heard, repeated in the privacy of his soul, a wisdom cry from rapt transcendences sang on the mountains of an unseen world. The voices that an inner listening hears conveyed to him their prophet utterances, and flame-wrapped outbursts of the immortal word and flashes of an occult revealing light approached him from the unreachable secrecy. An inspired knowledge sat enthroned within, whose seconds illumined more than reason's years. An ictus of revealing luster fell as if a pointing accent upon truth, and like a sky flare showing all the ground, a swift intuitive discernment shone. One glance could separate the true and false, or raise its rapid torch fire in the dark to check the claimants crowding through mind's gates, covered by the forged signatures of the gods, detect the magic bride in her disguise, or scan the apparent face of thought and life. Thank you so much. Namaste, Jai Ma.